This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm delighted now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Susan Tarman. She's coordinator of Amnesty International Local Group 122 here in Santa Fe, and we're here to talk about the annual Right for Rights event, which is happening this coming Friday at the Santa Fe Baking Company. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. It's lovely to be back. You always know it's the first week of December when you hear my voice on this radio show.
So that's when you do it, and Amnesty International is a group that basically provides a voice for political prisoners around the world, including the United States of America.
Yes, more and more with the United States of America since the war on terror started.
What are you doing this year? Who are some of the people that you're focusing on? The Right for Rights means people write letters and postcards about people who are unfairly and unjustly imprisoned to the powers that be, to the authorities, as part of Amnesty International, which has been, I must say, in the past, a very effective set of campaigns.
Well, the beauty of the Right for Rights campaign is that for the same 2 weeks in December every year, local groups from around the planet are writing on behalf of the same 10, 12, 15. We've had as much as 15 prisoners we've written on behalf of during the Right for Rights campaign. This year we have 12 people and groups that we're writing on behalf of.
What are some of the successes from the past?
Well, the most striking and the most recent would be Aung San Suu Kyi from Myanmar, Burma. We put flyers around town to let people know that this is happening. And the year that she was on the poster, you know, she's quite a beautiful woman, we had a lot of people coming to the baking company to write. And this year, we have a young woman who is very reminiscent of Aung San Suu Kyi. And her name is Phyo Phyo Aung, and she's a student leader.
And she's also from Myanmar, also known as Burma.
That's right. And her pretty picture is on the flyer that you'll see around town for these next couple of weeks.
Now, she has been imprisoned basically for being a student protester?
Yes. It started earlier this year, and she was one of the organizers. And again, it's always peaceful protests. And she was, and her fellow marchers were marching against a new law which said the students said limited academic freedom. And they were corralled, they were beaten, they were disappeared into prisons. And they're saying now that she could serve as many as 9 years.
Good heavens. So people may write letters on her behalf. There's also a number of other people, and these stories are all equally heartbreaking and in different ways. And one of them is an American. This one just gets under your skin.
It's true.
This fellow's name is Albert Woodfox, and he's been in prison for 43 years, not only in prison, but in solitary confinement.
Yes, and we have written on behalf of Albert Woodfox. Another thing we do is we write the prisoners, and it's a postcard, and it just only has to say, you're not forgotten, we're thinking of you. But we have written to him and on his behalf for decades, and our local group has done a lot to try to get Albert Woodfox out. And this year he's in the Right for Rights, so hopefully there'll be 10, 15, 20,000 letters going to the Attorney General in Louisiana, we're hoping.
Tell us his story.
Well, he was locked up, convicted in 1973 for the murder of a prison guard the year before while he was serving time for a robbery. He, as most of these prisoners of conscience are dealing with, there's no physical evidence linking him to the crime. His conviction, like most of these people, relied primarily on dubious testimony from either so-called eyewitnesses or other prisoners. And Albert believes his conviction was politically motivated because he was a member of the Black Panther Party.
Right. And so, I mean, a prison guard got killed, but there's no evidence linking him to it.
Right.
Somebody became the informant. That person was then pardoned.
That's right.
And Albert is in solitary confinement.
For 40 years.
40 years. The other thing about this case that's so mind-blowing is that his conviction has been overturned 3 times.
Yes.
His release was ordered by a federal judge, and the person who's blocking that release is Louisiana's attorney general, who just has some bee in his bonnet, or who knows?
Well, the Black Panther, the corralling up of the Black Panthers and other movements at the time is a long and confusing story, and your local Amnesty group really tries to shed some education on these people. I mean, the 70s, the 60s and the 70s was a time in America where American citizens were really expressing their beliefs on the inequality going on. And under J. Edgar Hoover, there was a very strong armed mission that was concocted in his office. And these Black Panthers and Brown Panthers and Young Lords and the Puerto Ricans, Oscar Rivera Lopez, they're all still in prison.
Yeah.
The AIM members, the American Indian Movement members, they're all still behind bars.
Well, one of the things that you're doing is asking President Obama to pardon Leonard Peltier.
That's right. Our local group took on Leonard's case as we often change who we write to and on their behalf from meeting to meeting. But earlier this year, we took on Leonard's case as something we're focusing on every meeting. And we have done a lot of, we've done some artwork. We've got some, and I'd like to present you with our one of our members did the artwork on this bumper sticker and on this button, and I'd like you to put them on your car and your sweater, and if you're not going to do it, please give it to someone who will.
It says, President Obama, I beg your pardon, free Leonard Peltier, and it has a turtle and 4 colors, which I'm guessing white, black, yellow, and red represent sort of 4 races. Is that what it is?
It's actually the 4 directions of the Native Americans. And they not only considered North America Turtle Island, but Leonard's mother was born in northern North Dakota on Turtle Mountain. And this this graphic artwork and the bumper sticker and the button were so popular that they've gone out around the U.S. through all the local groups. So we're really proud of that. And we did a lot of tabling. We're having children come to the table and coloring pictures of the turtle, feathers, an eagle coming out of bars, saying, free Leonard Peltier on the bottom. The children color these pictures. We send them to President Obama, and we also educate the parents. It was interesting. We did a number of actions this fall, and it's like the white people under 50 really don't know about Leonard Peltier at all. The white people over 50, many of them remember his case from the 70s. And then when we did some actions on some of the local Pueblos, every man, woman, and child.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a hero to them. And I think that's a reason why they're having a hard time letting him out, because as much as he wants to just go home and be a grandfather and a great-grandfather, they're afraid he's going to get a bunch of people rallying behind him.
And in a democracy, the problem with that is?
Well, the powers that be have to listen to too many other people trying to get their way, and they can't carry on with their agenda.
So Leonard Peltier was also convicted of a crime where there was dubious evidence against him.
There is no physical evidence connecting him to the crime. And they really accuse two other men who are higher up in AIM, the American Indian Movement. I really urge everybody to come to our... We're going to show at Jean Cocteau in early February, Incident at Oglala. And I really urge the listening audience to come to this filming, this screening of Incident at Oglala. The story is a little confusing, but with just a few facts, we can understand why the American Indian Movement was started. A lot of these minorities started these groups because they saw what a great job the Black Panthers were doing in getting education and hot meals to their neglected populations. And we're just trying to educate the community about these injustices that took place, let's face it, Mary Charlotte, 1970 was 40 years ago. It's too long to let these facts lie under the carpet and fester.
I was very disappointed that Bill Clinton didn't exercise his ability, his pardon, when he pardoned a lot of other pretty dubious criminal types.
Exactly. And isn't that just the way it goes? You can say that with just about every president since him.
So we're talking to Susan Tarman of Amnesty International about the Right for Rights event, which is this coming Friday at the Santa Fe Baking Company. And there's all kinds of things, like a fellow in Greece who was badly beaten up for his same-sex preference. There's people in Burkina Faso who are forced into early marriage. There's all kinds of horrible things going on all the time in the Democratic Republic of Congo. How do you choose, how does Amnesty International choose? I mean, because there must be thousands
gosh.
Of choices every year.
It's overwhelming. Sometimes it's really overwhelming of the people that we're trying to help. Amnesty International is highly organized based on excellent research. And it starts in the headquarters, which are in London, England. And it starts there. And then our headquarters, Amnesty USA, is in Washington, D.C. And there are members throughout the world that are experts just in certain areas of the world, and they all bring their research and information in, and then it's decided on a panel.
Now, one of them, which is particularly painful to all of us in this particular field, is a journalist named Mohammed Bekshanov of Uzbekistan was tortured into a false confession in 1999, and he's still in prison. What's he in prison for?
Well, in 1999, security forces tortured him because he was the editor of a banned opposition newspaper.
So he was tortured and imprisoned for having a paper.
That's right.
And he's still there. What about, I mean, is Uzbekistan a country where there are a lot of these human rights cases come out of?
There's a lot of these human rights cases that come out of almost every community on the planet anymore.
Really? Italy? France?
Oh, my
Germany?
Gosh. Oh, yes. Oh,
Norway?
Yes.
Denmark?
Yes.
No.
Yes. Everywhere. Everywhere, people. And I think with the war on terror, it's really gotten much worse.
So, Susan Tarman, you are involved, and many members across the country of Amnesty International are involved not only in letter-writing campaigns with Amnesty International, but also with lobbying. Like, you can actually go see your senators and representatives.
Yes, those are the two building blocks of Amnesty International, is writing letters and taking delegations to lobby the local senators and representatives of Congress in the communities of the local groups. We do it every year. We do it with House and Senate bills that are coming up that have to do with human rights issues. And do you want me to mention what we're going to be doing this? It was supposed to be this October, but our senators are not going to be able to see us then, so we're going to do it at the end of January. There's three issues that we're going to bring to Senator Udall and Senator Heinrich's attention. There's a Solitary Confinement Study and Reform Act of 2015 that we're going to ask them to co-sponsor. There is the BICI Accountability Act. That's the Bahrain Independent Commission of Inquiry Act of 2015.
What's that all about?
Well, that's opposing the U.S. arms sales to Bahrain. When we hear of these countries so far away, it's sometimes hard to get behind them totally because it's hard to relate. But the fact that the U.S. supplies, what is it, probably 90% of all of the arms around the planet, and everybody's fighting each other, and they're almost all manufactured in our country, we did decide to talk to our senators about these bills.
It's funny, if we were supplying food that had poison in it and everybody was getting sick, we'd find a way not to do it. But somehow, some kind of like primal chimpanzee warrior instinct allows us to keep thinking that fighting and destroying is a way to solve problems.
Well, look at the reaction from the Paris attack. They just started bombing, like, you know, 12 hours later.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, it's our knee-jerk reaction.
And the conversation of what alternative forms of resolving conflicts are is a really interesting question. I went to the Lannan Foundation event the other night at which Richard Falk spoke. And he said something that was very interesting to me. He said the whole conflict in Northern Ireland, between Ireland and Northern Ireland and IRA terrorism, was not resolved until I forget the person who was in power, but until that person decided to see the IRA not as a group of crazy terrorists, but as a group representing people who had actual grievances.
Yes.
Which was a very interesting way to think about looking at the kind of terrorism that we are encountering now, which is big and scary and evil and horrible, and thinking about that as people group with grievances like breaks everybody's brain. But what's the truth of it?
Well, and I think even the CIA and the U.S. admits we can't kill our way out of this terrorism issue on the planet. We can't kill our way out of it. Yeah. They are doing that for us, whether we like it or not, to give some time and space to the issues. But that only gives some time and space to the issues. The issues have to be addressed. Yeah. We have to have these people at the table, all the people at the table.
Lobbying on the part of citizens, American citizens, you know, to their representatives and senators and citizens groups like Amnesty International, which is another form of citizen lobbying done in a group context, is one of the ways that actual democracy, citizen democracy, can be exercised besides voting. What is your experience of going into these offices and talking to these senators and having those conversations, which I dare say that most of our listeners have never done?
Thank you so much for asking that question, because lobbying your senators and your representatives is not only so much easier than it sounds, but there is such a connection that goes on when you're sitting there talking to this person that I can't say for everybody, but they seem you know, out of reach. They seem above us all, and they're not. They are there to represent us. When we bring these issues up to them, you always send your materials ahead of time, and when we sit down and talk about these issues, they're truly interested. There's no way they can keep on top of all of these issues, even with a staff. So by the citizenry coming in and saying, you know, this Police Reporting Information Data and Evidence Act of 2015, they may not even have heard of it. And you can educate them on it. They truly care that you have done it. It's very empowering for the citizen, because it is so much more personal than just going into a voting booth. And you, if you do it enough, you can run into these people on the street and actually be recognized by them. It is really what democracy is about. And it's so easy. It's so much easier than we think it is.
Or you just make an appointment.
You make an appointment. They're happy to have you, as long as you send your materials ahead of time so they know what you're coming in to talk about. They're so grateful to have some extra help on the issues that matter to them and to their constituents.
It's also, I mean, when you are, I wouldn't trade places with Tom Udall or Martin Heinrich for all the tea in China, because they have so many issues. I mean, basically,
so
the entire complex countries and really world issues that they have to keep track of. And because of our campaign finance system, they have to spend half their time fundraising.
That's right. And if you go in every year, you know, the first year, they don't really know who you are. The second year, they don't really know who you are. After that, and you can go in twice a year. We usually have lobbying opportunities twice annually. And after a while, they start to get to know you. And if they don't know you personally, they know your group.
Yeah.
And that's important. And it doesn't have to be human rights. We welcome you to come join us at the end of January to discuss these issues. But if your issue is education, if you care about the mental health issues, whatever is your issue, you are welcome to make an appointment. You don't have to be part of a group either.
Right. And all of our senators and representatives do have offices here in New Mexico. So
throughout New Mexico.
Yeah.
They don't have to come to the Capitol.
Right. And so people can basically take it upon themselves. I mean, what was do you remember what the first time was like that you ever did that?
Oh my
gosh. I would think the initiation of that would be sort of scary.
Well, that's why I push how easy it is, because the first time we did it, oh my gosh, we had like 3 meetings beforehand, and, you know, we dressed as if we were, you know, the professionals that we wanted to put ourselves across as, which you should dress when you go into their offices. But it was just very exciting and very nerve-wracking. And I'll tell you, the nerve-wracking part of it goes away, but the excitement really never goes away, because you are being an active part of the democracy that we're so proud of in this world. And that's, if they don't hear from you, they're going to listen to the lobbyists with the loudest voices.
Right. And I think the other thing that is important to say is that volunteer citizen lobbying of the kind that you're talking about is really important in the face of all the incredibly well-paid corporate lobbying that's going on.
Well, exactly. Exactly. And that's why they get away with it, because they have paid people who do it for their living. And that's what they hear drummed over and over and over again. And if we would be that part of that drumbeat, we'd probably have more of a say.
Susan Tarman is coordinator of Amnesty International Local Group 122 here in Santa Fe. And once again, this Friday is the annual Right for Rights event at the Santa Fe Baking Company. You don't have to bring anything. The pencils, the papers, the postcards, all of that stuff, pens, I suppose, rather than pencils, will be here. What time are you meeting?
We start right away at 8 a.m. and we start to close it up about 1 p.m.
So 8 in the morning, which is around the start time of the Santa Fe Radio Cafe, and till 1 in the afternoon. And of course, the coffee here flows like a river. actually more than probably most Santa Fe rivers. Susan Tarman, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.